Welcome to Donor Audio Interview 2882.
Who do you aspire to be?
Oscar Romero was somebody that I really admire. He was a priest who lived in the late 70s, early 80s in El Salvador. And he was just a regular guy, like real book smart and easygoing and to himself and the kind of person that you wouldn't notice. And then he got asked to be Archbishop of the country, and the reason was specifically because of the type of person that he was. That he wasn't somebody to rock the boat or to shake things up. But the reason that they wanted him to be that was because the Catholic Church was aligned with the government down there. The government was persecuting the poor people in the country, and people were dying. And so Oscar Romero, eventually he started to see these things and had to face a choice. And he chose to stand up and to really do the right thing. I think what was neat about it was it wasn't out of any desire for fame or anything like that, because that's just the opposite of the kind of person that he was. But he did it because he felt like he had to, and like love for the people like overcame who he was and what he wanted to do, and instead he chose to do the right thing. And he eventually died for it, was killed for it. But
how would you describe your personality?
I'm very, very, very inquisitive. I get really fascinated by things and will get really absorbed. And I guess also passionate, but also, friendly or easygoing at the same time.
What lessons growing up did your parents teach you that have had a significant impact on your life?
My dad was really big on responsibility and really big on being reliable. My dad has a lot of high character. He's really good at just trying to do the right thing. The things that he cared about are very different from the things that I care about. But that basic, we're very different people and interested in very different things. That basic trait was something that I just saw growing up. I was around it. I grew up in it, like just naturally. I didn't, when my dad said that we need to do this at this time, we did it at that time, and he was there at that time. And when he said, you need to do this way, because it's the right thing to do, he did that himself. He had other traits that were, negative or whatever at times, but when he said something, he did it himself. And when he expected something of you, he really expected it. There was just this integrity there. And I didn't appreciate until later how that wasn't quite as common. I'd spend time at friends' houses and, it wouldn't always be exactly the same thing.
What do you think are the most admirable qualities a person can have, and why?
Well, I guess tying in with what I had said about my dad, that integrity. I guess another thing would be courage, the willingness to do what you might be afraid to do. But I think the kind of courage that is most admirable is the one that comes over time, that you have to prove over and over again. I'm blown away when someone makes a statement of sacrifice, or when someone, does something in the moment that is brave. But it's overwhelming and really awe-inspiring when you come across a person that has lived their life making courageous decisions, and they consistently do it over and over again, sticking to a tough choice and seeing it through and pushing through and not giving up and being counted on day after day after day after day. That takes such an incredible strength, and in certain cases love and compassion, that is deep-rooted and that doesn't go away. And I don't know, that blows me away.
Tell me about the most cherished present you ever received and why this gift was so special.
I would say, like, when I was a little kid, they got me the Shockwave Transformer, which was really cool. Or they got me Knight Rider walkie-talkies, which is really neat too. But I also, when I was a little bit older, my mom got me a sewing machine, and it was this real heavy-duty one. And I thought that was, I really liked that a lot, because it showed a lot of thought into exactly what I wanted or was interested in. Like, she had no idea that I needed one, really. I mean, at least not from the things that I had said. But I think she had just been so observant and noticed something that I said that I don't remember saying. And, I mean, it just ended up being exactly what I needed at the time. And I don't know how she knew that. And that's really neat. So, yeah.
What is your favorite holiday and why?
I think I kind of like New Year's, I guess, because it's I mean, it's a fresh start for everyone, and it's also a celebration of everything that happened the year before, and it's something that's really uniting. I mean, everybody's experiencing it at the same time, regardless of their background or their baggage, you know. Like, I mean, something bad might have happened to them in a previous New Year's, but it's not the same as, you know, some people have a tough time during Christmas or because of family problems or things like that. But New Year's seems like everyone's ready to celebrate. It's uniting in a way that's different from all the other holidays, I think, so.
What is your most memorable vacation?
I went with my dad out to California, and it was the first time really like hanging out with my dad a lot, you know. And so it was a lot of fun. We went to Yosemite, and Yosemite is gorgeous. And you get there and you look up, and the cliffs are a mile high, and they're so high and they're so close to you that they look like they're hanging over you, you know, even though they're not. But it looks like that. It's amazing. The trees on the very tops of the mountains are like are tiny little specks, even though they're, you know, actually 100 foot tall Douglas firs and redwoods and stuff like that. And then when the sun sets, it sets on the granite wall, and the wall the these mountains are a light gray, almost white. So when the sun is setting, it reflects the orange and the reds, and the mountains look like they're glowing. And it's amazing. The waterfalls are huge. They're one of them is 800 feet tall. Yeah, it's really gorgeous. Plus, I saw a bear. We did a little horseback riding, and we went into the back woods a ways, which was cool. I don't think my dad really wanted to do that, and we went out in the backwoods a little bit, and yeah, I remember seeing a little black bear, and I thought that was so cool.
What types of books did you enjoy in your childhood, and did you have a favorite book?
Yeah, when I was a little kid, it was Fantastic Mr. Fox, because the fox was so crafty and had all these little tricks that he kept doing, and I thought that was funny and kind of neat. And then when I was a little bit older, I had just gotten pretty good at reading, and my sisters were reading this really big book, and they both were really into it, and I just wanted to read it just because it was really big. And I was just so excited about reading it for the first time or whatever. And it was called Watership Down. And it's about these rabbits, and but they can communicate with each other, you know, and they go on this long journey and all that, and I read it and I couldn't put it down. It took me, you know, for I mean, as that little kid, it took me a while to finish it, but I mean, weeks, maybe a month, I don't know, but I just got enthralled by it, you know, kind of inspired by the journeys of the rabbits and the endurance that the rabbits had to overcome all these challenges and make it to the end.
What type of books do you enjoy now, and what is your favorite book?
The Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky is amazing. He is, well, for several different reasons. Just as a book, Dostoevsky is so good at developing a character. The characters become almost more real than people. I mean, there's so much depth to them, and but what's amazing is they have incredible depth, and yet they're not very lovable a lot of times. I mean, it's not, he's so good at, he's just a very honest person, I think, because I think most authors and most writers, especially in movies, especially Hollywood movies, you've got a bad guy and a good guy, or you've got a person that's all flawed, but they're like lovable flaws, you know? There's something that you want to care about that person. Oh, he's a drinker, but he means well, you know. Or oh, he's a bank robber, but he doesn't really hurt people, or he protects the women and children. You know, there's always something about the character that's lovable. Dostoevsky makes characters that the protagonist sometimes is not lovable, you know, like will hurt an innocent person or just do something that makes all of us think that's just horrible or that's just wrong. And I just don't respect the person for doing that. And he will develop a character like that and describe them in such detail, though, that you either will still care about them or be fascinated by them because you know them inside and out. And then he unpacks the surroundings and he unpacks the story. I mean, for some people that might be boring because it's so much detail. But for me, it just brings everything to life on such an amazing level. And then on top of that, he likes to wrestle with issues of faith and belief. And I love that. And he likes to, specifically, he likes to wrestle with it. Again, like I said before, he's very honest. And I love how he shows how difficult it is to really believe in something beautiful and to believe in something hopeful that even you may not be able to see or that might not be there in front of you. And I love the dichotomy of that. Like, it's a situation of struggle and suffering, and things are not going very well. And yet there's this discourse within the book struggling with belief, and some of the characters will you know, be faced with that question. And that's a lot of what that his books are about, is the desire to believe in something beautiful and hopeful and good and true, despite the depravity of each other and of yourself and of the things around you and of the situation.
What is your favorite word and why?
Oh, it always changes. I don't know, the first word that popped in my head was onomatopoeia. that word just sounds so much like somebody made it up. The word describes just noises, or other words that make noises, like boing and boom. And it's just such a funny word that has such a funny connotation and is unique.
What is your ideal way to relax on the weekend?
Oh, it changes so much. I mean, a lot of times I just like something really, really simple. You know, like I like to just find, I mean, it's just comfort in every way, you know, like a friend that I'm really, really know really well and I'm comfortable around, and just stay at home and watch a movie or grab a beer. Some crazy escape, you know, like some big hiking trip that's challenging and tough. Or another thing that my friends will do sometimes on the weekends that's really fun is we'll do like covert actions of random kindness, which, you know, we'll come up with some, you know, if it's snowed really bad, you know, shovel the neighbor's driveway before they realize, you know, or things like that, or just things where like the person has no idea that you did it or who did it, and it's kind of weird for somebody to do it, but then when they come out and see it, you know, it kind of blows them away because it's unexpected and they have no idea who did it, and kind of hopefully it doesn't freak them out, but but something that is not just, I can't think of good examples at the moment, but something that's not just like a nice thing to do, but that's kind of fun to sneak around doing it and have to do it in a way where you don't get caught, you know, so.
Has anyone ever told you that you resemble a particular celebrity?
Yeah, even though when I was in Turkey, our first day, we go to the tomb of Ataturk. Ataturk is like their Abraham Lincoln. Like, he's this guy that they really revere. And the memorial where we were, it looked like Lincoln's memorial. It's huge, and there's this huge square in the middle. And they always have the high school students or the college students come and visit the memorial. And there was this group of high school students or college students or girls, I'm not sure, but they all kind of started giggling and pointing and asked to have their picture with me, and the reason is because they thought I was Leonardo DiCaprio, which I don't see how that's, but it was kind of, he's cool, you know, he's a good, he's a pretty cool guy, I guess, you know. I liked it.
What is your favorite period of history and why?
World War II seems like, I don't know if I would call it my favorite period of, World War II is one thing that pops to mind. It was maybe the first time in history where the entire world was heavily impacted by each other all at the same time. And it was intense and it was horrible. Over 70 million people died situation. There was just a lot of amazing and horrible things happened. So, and I'm still connected to it enough to where, like, I can ask my, you know, I when my grandparents were still around, I got to ask them about it. And there's enough. And I guess the other thing that fascinates with me about it is you can still see footage of it. It was just recent enough to where they have a lot of footage, so you can really like get an idea of how it actually was a little bit, you know. I think video can go a long way to do that, and then the first-hand experiences, so you get a good sense of, you know, you can get a good window into what actually happened, and what happened was unbelievable and profound and impacted everything that happens today. So I'm fascinated with that. I'm also kind of fascinated with the, you know, when the time when Jesus was born. I think it's pretty neat. I mean, it would have been amazing to have been there during that time for the obvious reasons, but also because that also was a pretty intense time in history, and which I think is part of why he came at that time. And it's a time period where, I mean, I was in Palestine, I was in Israel, I got to see a lot of it, and I would have loved to have seen it, you know, fully functioning. I think it would be fascinating to see how people live, you know, back then when there just was no technology, or any time where there was no electricity and any of the things that we have now. I think it would be really fascinating to live where everybody's worldview is just completely different from how we have it now, because their experiences and what they know of the world is just fundamentally different. I mean, it's one thing to meet someone from a different country, but I think it's another thing to meet someone where the entire culture and the way that they know the world and the information that's out there and the technology that's out there is completely different.
Why did you decide to participate in this donor program?
Well, for money. I mean, I found, you know, you know, if you did it, you'd get some money, and it would be nice to have that. But, I mean, as I was applying, I was thinking about, I can't think of people that I would want more to have children. People that are working so hard to have children that they're willing to go to a donation center and to have a child, and that they're preparing for it, and they obviously have the resources for it. And I mean, fundamentally, they really want to have kids. That's the perfect situation for kids to be raised. And so that's actually exciting to, I think there's way too many people out there, obviously, you know, having kids that are not ready, or having kids where they think they're ready, but they're really not, you know. And that's a tough situation for a kid to be raised in. And that's a tough situation for the parents. And so it's exciting that to be a part of, you know, to be helping a family that really wants to have kids, and that is have put a lot of preparation into it, and have the time and the resources for it, so that's good. Yeah.
Is there a message you would like to add for recipients or offspring listening to this interview?
No, just good luck to you.
This concludes Donor Audio Interview 2882.